case for the morning. John Lee Shoulders versus Lorenzo Coleman. We had a discussion with the courtroom deputy a moment ago about how time may be divided up. We will leave that for you to decide, and staying at the table is satisfactory. We'll hear from Ms. Brown.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Gwen Brown, and I represent the defendants, the City of Baton Rouge, and Baton Rouge City Police Officer Detective John Coleman. This case is before the court on a civil matter. Mr. Shoulders filed suit against the city and one of our police officers after he was injured during the course of his arrest. And then the defendants filed a motion for summary judgment asserting qualified immunity. That motion for summary judgment was denied by the district court. And then we filed an appeal, which is why we're here today. The standard of review is de novo, and while this is an interlocutory order, not necessarily subject to review by appeal, when the defense is qualified immunity, it is appropriately considered because immunity serves as a bar, of course, as the court knows, to suit. I'm just going to do a brief recitation of the facts.
Ms. Brown, we know the facts.
You know the facts.
The problem here, and you need to explain this to us, is that Judge Brady found a genuine dispute of material fact, and you're here for Mr. Coleman on qualified immunity, and the rule is that we allow an interlocutory appeal from the denial of qualified immunity when you are arguing an issue of law. But when a judge finds a genuine dispute of material fact, you're required to urge and show us why the facts in dispute are not material. And in the brief at 21, you don't do that in the brief, and I forget whether you wrote this brief. Did you write the brief?
Yes, sir.
All right. Your brief never touches on that point, never says, well, the facts in dispute are not material. So we're probably without jurisdiction to hear your appeal. The closest you come is that in your opening brief at 21, you say there is no material fact in existence. What do you mean by that?
Well, what the court turned on in deciding that there were inconsistent facts. First of all, the plaintiff has no recollection of this event, so it was only the defendant's evidence was adduced. The court found a genuine issue of material fact concerning what Detective Coleman put in his use of force report and then his testimony. In fact, those were not material. There is no dispute there. As the court well knows, it's quite common for an officer to prepare a report and then to later explain through deposition testimony or trial testimony to elaborate on what those terms mean. And here, the Baton Rouge Police Department has a policy in place concerning use of force and the appropriate responses. And Detective Coleman detailed three different ways in which Mr. Shoulders had not complied with his instructions. And the court kind of applied it like some type of mathematical formula and said, well, because of the order in which he wrote them, he's finding that the brachial stun technique was used in response to the least aggressive form of resistance. In fact, that's not what happened. Detective Coleman explained in detail that he used the brachial stun maneuver in response to the assault and the impending threat that he found.
Yes, ma'am, but the deposition was 2 years after the incident, and in the reports prepared contemporaneously with the incident, there is a difference between what's said in the report and what's said in the deposition, isn't there?
There is somewhat of a...
And the district judge found that created a genuine dispute of material fact. And you haven't claimed that what the judge found to be a genuine dispute of material fact isn't material. For example, you know, if he had said in the incident, I gave him this technique at 2 a.m. and later, he said in his deposition, I gave it to him at 3 a.m. Well, that wouldn't be a material dispute of fact. That doesn't matter whether he did it at 2 or 3, but the statements in these two contemporaneous reports as compared to his testimony 2 years later, the district judge found created a genuine dispute of material fact. And you've got to show us why that's not material.
Well, one reason, the most obvious reason, is that Graham versus Connor says that an individual police department's use of force policy does not determine whether a particular use of force is excessive. So even if it were found that he did it in the order in which the way at which it was listed in the report, it wouldn't matter unless it was an inappropriate response. And Detective Coleman's testimony made clear that he did it in response to the aggressive action that Shoulders was taking as he moved towards him. And under that's something that this court can determine as a matter of law whether that's something that any reasonable the standard is whether any reasonable officer would not have found that to be an appropriate use of conduct. I mean, an appropriate response to that conduct. And
also, one way I read the district court's opinion is not that he does in one sentence say that the deposition of Coleman and the rest report provide a different view, maybe a dispute. But I think more of what he's talking about is I don't know enough from all the evidence that, and the only evidence is from the defendant, what happened. And I don't see that he acted consistent with what qualified immunity requires. Do you accept that reading, or how would you respond to that statement that he just said, that the judge just said, I don't know enough from the evidence you've given me to grant qualified immunity, though he does use the word dispute at some stage of material fact?
Well, there's no...
Do you agree that that may be what the judge was holding, or have you focused enough on the opinion, or even maybe my question was a little confusing? Did the judge actually find a dispute of material fact or insufficient facts to resolve the qualified immunity issue?
The way that I read it, he found that it was disputed, that there was a disputed issue of fact.
And what does he say that dispute was? Since the only evidence is from your client.
The disputes that he notes are the dispute. He finds that there's a dispute among the what he used in his use of force report, what he wrote in his use of force report, and his testimony. And I would, in response to that, I would say that.
Well, what dispute as to what? Obviously, those are the two sources. But what specifically are you saying Judge Brady was saying was different in the police report, other than what I said? Is that he thought these two sources of information provide a different view regarding plaintiff's action?
Well, what he said was that there's Baton Rouge Police Department has a use of force continuum, and there's different levels of resistance that a suspect can display, and then there's different responses that are appropriate depending upon the severity of the complaint. Judge Brady found in his report that because when Detective Coleman wrote his report, he used like a level one level of resistance. He put that down as what he had responded to, with the more aggressive response being the non-lethal force of this brachial stun maneuver. And so he found that that was an inconsistency with his testimony during the deposition, when he explained that no, he had used the brachial stun maneuver in response to Shoulders approaching him. And then also he found an issue when he used the word stepped up. He used the term stepped up to him in the report, and he said that that wasn't clear as to what stepped up meant. And in response to that, I would say that the deposition testimony was extensive and detailed. He was thoroughly cross-examined during his deposition testimony. He explained all the background information in detail as well, you know, in full detail, but what occurred. There's no reason to believe that were this matter to go to trial, that his testimony would change from what it was in his deposition testimony. So the law is clear that when you're entitled to qualified immunity, which the burden is quite strict on the plaintiff to show that no reasonable officer would have responded in this manner, then he should be entitled to immunity from suit, and this case should not go any further. That's what this defense of qualified immunity is intended to prevent.
In your 12 pages of brief of applying the law to the facts, you cite, I think, only one case, the Manis decision. But you're familiar with the Manis decision?
Yes, Your Honor. I can't remember exactly which one that one is right now, but
it's the only case that I saw in that application of law to facts. But I, you know, when I looked at it, it looked like it was undisputed that the individual lunged under the seat. So in that context, it's sort of, it is a little different than the position you're arguing here, where you deal with the disputed facts in footnote 4. Psychological intimidation, never swung. Those are the two points that district court focused on, sort of creating an issue of fact. If you apply Graham and you get up to a brachial stun as the response to psychological intimidation and not swinging, that's what Brady's saying, right?
Right, yes, Your Honor.
But I don't see that Manis helps you out of that predicament.
Well,
is there a better case? I guess here is a long-winded way to say, what's your best authority for the position you're urging?
Graham v. Connor, I would say.
But you don't brief the Graham factors.
This was something that we did just use in the original. Obviously, we should have cited more cases.
That comes back to my question. I don't see your name anywhere on this brief. I see a Mr. Hilburn signed it and there's...
Right, it is Mr. Hilburn's brief, and I did, you know, help him prepare it. He prepared the motion for summary judgment and the memo in support and then the reply memorandum. And I helped him get it into final form because I typically handle the appeals in our office. Mr. Hilburn handled the case from the get-go. He's no longer with our office. He's retired, so I'm here arguing the case, but... there were a lot more cases cited in those other memorandums, and I can't.
All right, counsel. Anything further?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. We do dry throats out. In the Fifth Circuit.
Your Honor, we split the argument 10 minutes, 10 minutes, but I think that I don't know if that's going to be necessary or not. No. What I think our burden of proof in this court is to show that when the facts are viewed in the light most favorable to our client, non-movement in the case, that the law is clear, that in response to psychological intimidation, which is what Mr. Coleman put in his use of force report within 2 hours of the incident occurring, that he responded with a level of force that greatly exceeded that, as contemplated in General Order 135, which is the Baton Rouge Police Department's use of force regulations, and in accordance with Mr. Coleman's testimony during the deposition, in which he said that they are trained to respond to a threat with a level of force that is consistent with that.
Well, Kelso, it's one thing to say that he should have known or did know that he violated Baton Rouge's protocols on the use of force. It's something else to say he knew all reasonable officers would have known that use of force would have violated the constitutional rights of your client. So how do we get to that? Why are the Baton Rouge protocols even relevant?
Well, the Baton Rouge protocols and the training are what teach the officers how to respond to a particular threat. And if you're looking for objective reasonableness as to what a officer should respond to and what training and what knowledge he has in order to respond to a specific threat, then I think it's very important to look at the training, the General Order 135, which has very specific definitions about the level of threats that are posed and the level of force and the force continuum that's used to respond to it. In addition, the General Order 135 also says that excessive force is any force greater than that required to respond to the threat being posed. Now,
does the threat include the full circumstance of undisputed fact? Would it
Is it, let me ask it this way, is it undisputed that your client was resisting leaving the stadium and then threw a bag off to the side, or is that hotly disputed?
I think it's only at the moment that the excessive force is used.
Including that he took his hands off the vehicle the first time, or is it just the second time?
Just the second time, Your Honor.
And what's your authority for that, that it's just the precise moment as opposed to an officer's assessment of this individual's larger threat?
Well, if you brought a specific answer to the question, I don't know. I can't cite to you a specific case that says at the moment. I just don't recall that right now. But if you expand it out to the full panoply of activity that occurred before, none of that exceeded a level, the third level, the verbal noncompliant.
I thought he'd already given
passive resistance.
I thought he first said to him, get your hands back on the car.
He did, and he complied with it. The point being that in all the activity that occurred before the force was occurred, none of that posed an imminent threat to the officer. All five officers who testified said Mr. Shoulders did not present any threat to them at all, which is why they didn't handcuff him. And he complied with a verbal command when he initially took his hands off the car. There's nothing to indicate that he wouldn't have complied again if Mr. Coleman would have said, put your hands back on the car.
Well, all of this gets back to my original question about us even having jurisdiction over this appeal. Interestingly, you don't urge we lack jurisdiction. You get into it as hashing out all the evidence. But, you know, jurisdiction, we review sua sponte. But so tell us why you feel that there is a material dispute of fact as opposed to just a dispute about facts that are not material.
We believe that the difference between Officer Coleman's testimony and the use of force report and the incident report, which were filled out within 2 hours, show a genuine dispute of material fact. It's certainly material as to the threat that was posed to Officer Coleman, and as a result, that's a genuine dispute. I think the court agreed with that.
As you argue your evidence, it seems to me your position almost is that this dispute is not material, because even in the light most, taking the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-movement, this does not show the propriety of the use of this level of force, that nothing in the officer's testimony or police report would have justified the use of this level of force. Is that your position?
Before the district court, our burden was to establish that there was a genuine issue of material fact, and we think we did so, the district court so found. Before this court, I think our burden is to establish, with the facts viewed in the light most favorable to my client, that when you apply the law to that, that excessive force was used. In response to psychological intimidation, a force greater than that required was used in order to resist or stop my client.
Was it your position that the deposition by itself may have shown the propriety of the use of this level of force?
No, I don't believe the deposition shows that at all.
So the dispute is not material, it seems to me you're saying.
No, in this court is required to address the facts in the light most favorable to our client, which but is the use of force.
I'm saying the dispute's not material because you win under either construction, either of the police report or under the deposition. That nothing has been shown to justify qualified immunity, it seems to me you're saying, dispute or no dispute.
I think that's right. I do argue that the facts of this case, when viewed in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, including the deposition, establish that excessive force was used.
Which means we probably have jurisdiction.
Well, jurisdiction to apply the law to the facts in the lights most favorable to the plaintiff. And under those circumstances, I believe that we win that argument. I do remember seeing a case, as Judge Barksdale has pointed out, I can't remember the name of it, that did suggest that there was no jurisdiction for this court to review a question of fact so long as it pertained to genuineness. I do think that, the facts that pertain to reasonableness of the force used are material. So that is within this court's purview.
All right, counsel. Anything further?
I really don't have anything.
We'll allow you to add if you want to. I mean, we're not requiring it, but...
About all of the facts that constituted genuine issues of material fact, genuine issues of fact, those are all material facts because they're all relevant to element of recovery, whether or not the force is excessive, whether or not the use of that excessive force is objectively reasonable. So it's all certainly material, and I don't think there's any dispute coming from Officer Coleman that those facts are not material. So I would submit that under the Freeman case, there is in fact, as long as the argument is that what Officer Coleman did was respond appropriately to what he perceived to be a threat, as long as that's the argument, the court doesn't have jurisdiction.
All right, counsel. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear the rebuttal.
Very briefly, Your Honors, I would just argue that it's immaterial whether or not the particular order in the Baton Rouge Police Department was followed, because again, the law is clear that the individual officer's conduct is judged by the Fourth Amendment standard. And his testimony made clear that he used a brachial stun maneuver, which is a non-lethal karate chop to the shoulder, in response to an approaching defendant. There's nothing in the Fourth Amendment that requires him to actually sustain an attack. He's permitted under the Fourth Amendment to use that response. And so it's not, regardless of the order in which the events were written in the report, is not material, because his conduct still brings him within his conduct was still within the confines of the Fourth Amendment, and that's the appropriate way in which it should be judged.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank both sides for your arguments.